Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. I believe that the Second Amendment makes all of the other amendments possible. And this podcast is not too political, and it's not too radical, and not too technical. Because I am not a gunsmith, I'm not ex-law enforcement, I'm not ex-military, and I'm not a firearms trainer. I'm just a private citizen, and I believe strongly in my Second Amendment rights. So I'm going to keep it real and talk about guns. So let's get started with the show.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
All right, welcome to episode number 77. Coming to you today from the great city of Houston, Texas. Even though I am based in Dallas, Fort Worth, I come to Houston a lot on business. So guess what? I'm not driving down the freeway this time. I'm actually sitting here. I got a little bit of time to kill between business appointments, so I thought I would go ahead and bring you, or begin to bring you here, episode 77. In segment one, I would like to talk about becoming a more complete shooter. And I've covered this before, you know, talking about being process-oriented shooter, and I shared some information with you a couple months ago about Bruce Gray, and I've also shared a bunch of information from you from a lot of firearms trainers. And becoming a more complete shooter is a challenge, and a lot of people ask, well, what do you mean by that, Bob? You know, what is a complete shooter? Have you ever wondered that? You know, have you ever asked yourself, what do I need to become a complete shooter? What do I need to be able to defend myself properly? I ask myself that question about once or twice a week. The answer is very complicated. In my humble opinion, it's different for everybody. It depends on your skill level, and it depends on your physical level. But there are some basics that you can't ignore. In my opinion, I think shooting is like anything else. It's like anything else that you want to learn. You have to master the basics first. Once you master the basics, then you can move on. You know, somebody once told me, one of my old mentors told me, being successful is not doing extraordinary things. Being successful is doing ordinary things extraordinarily well. And if you think about that, isn't that true with shooting? Being a good shooter is not to do extraordinary things. Being a good shooter is just doing the basics of all the shooting techniques that we know and doing them well. So I think that should be a goal. You know, pick a couple things that you do well. I heard on another podcast, I think on Rob Robideau's Personal Armament podcast, he interviewed Dave Spalding recently, and they were talking about practice methods. You need to listen to that podcast. It's a great show. They were talking about practice methods, and I think the main point, or one of the main points that they made, was to start by something that you do well. Whatever shooting it is that you do well. If you do well standing there plinking, okay, fine. Start with that, and then gradually move into moving and shooting, and shooting from different positions, and so forth. And start with that as a confidence builder, but you have to push yourself outside of the box. You have to push yourself out of your comfort zone. That's the key. And I've learned throughout my life that the pushing myself out of the comfort zone is important. I got to tell you, you know, some of you may not know this, but let me just take a little departure here from the topic. I'll get back on topic here in just a minute. Last week, on August 6th, the Handgun World Show became 1 year old. I did my first podcast August 6th, 2009. So thank you to all of you listeners for a great first year. I'll tell you, I had to get out of my comfort zone to do this podcast. This wasn't something, even though I have a career in public speaking in the past, and I do a lot of sales and marketing work now, you know, doing this just was a little bit weird. It was strange for me at first. I had a passion about firearms. I think you can feel my passion come through when I talk about this subject, but it was a little different, and I had to get out of my comfort zone to do this. But you know what? I found that after three or four podcasts, I was no longer in an uncomfortable position. Now it feels like I'm in my comfort zone just doing this show. So it's weird. I at first I had to step out of my comfort zone to be able to do it, and then now it feels like I'm in my comfort zone when I do it. I hope that's not confusing. But that's what you'll find with shooting skills as well. You'll try something different, and you won't be very good at it. Trust me, you won't be very good at it at all. For me, it was performing reloads. When I first started learning to perform reloads, especially in competition shooting in IDPA, I was getting out of my comfort zone, because most of the shooting I had done up to that point, before IDPA, most of my shooting involved doing everything but reloading. In fact, I was practicing drawing from my holster, and I was practicing getting my sights on target and getting a good sight picture and front sight press and all that, and a decent stance and a decent grip. I wasn't practicing reloads. So what happens to me the first few IDPA matches? Whoa, when I had to do a tactical reload, or when I had to do a reload with retention, or even a slide lock reload, I was lost. Because I hadn't practiced it, and I hadn't gotten out of my comfort zone. But sure enough, after I did it for a while, then I actually got back into my comfort zone, because it became second nature. So that's the point that I wanted to start with in becoming a more complete shooter. So there was a good article that I want to share with you. And I found myself relating to this article. I subscribe to Warrior Talk News that Gabe Suarez puts out. And most of the trainers over at Suarez International put out an article on Warrior Talk News. You need to go to Warrior Talk News and check that out. Just Google that. You'll go to Gabe's website and you'll get some good information, get a good newsletter. Good stuff. There's an instructor named Randy Harris. He's one of their Tier 1 instructors, and he put out a great article recently about sighted shooting. You know, there's a big argument out there. You know, do we become sighted shooters, or do we become point shooters, or do we become a combination of both? And it really depends on who you talk to. And when I read Randy's article, I really liked what he had to say, because the overall theme here, this message, is that he's both. He's a sighted shooter, and he's a point shooter, and it really depends on the situation you find yourself in. Whatever self-defense situation you find yourself in is probably what's going to dictate whether you point shoot or use your sights. And I hope that day never comes, but you need to be prepared for it. Isn't it amazing? We prepare so much. We train ourselves to be good shooters. We train ourselves in self-defense. We spend all this time and money on something that's probably never going to happen. And that's true. There's a very good chance you'll go the rest of your life and you won't have to pull your gun on anybody. I hope you don't. But we train because it could save our life if we do. If we do have to pull our gun, it could save our life. And it should save your life. Why do you carry them if they're not going to save your life? And you better be ready. Because, you know, your life is precious, folks. And I love what Dave Spalding said in that interview. I want to quote Dave in that interview with Rob Robideau on the Personal Armament Podcast. You know what he said? He said something really cool. He said, for those of you that have families, once somebody loves you, once you have a family member who loves you, you now give up the right to give up. It's pretty profound. You owe it to yourself and you owe it to your family to be ready. So even in the 0.1% chance, maybe, that you may have to pull your gun, are you ready? Are you ready for that? First of all, can you pull the trigger? That's a really important question. That's a whole subject for another podcast. Can you pull the trigger? I can. At least I think I can. But then again, how are you going to handle that whole situation? So let's dive into this. Randy talks about the fact that he said, you know, he's definitely a sighted fire shooter, and he's also a point shooter. And he says, I simply shoot however I need to in order to hit the target as quickly as I can, no matter what the target is and how far away the target is. But some see it as an all-or-nothing proposition. Now, if you read the internet or a lot of gun magazines, you're bound to run into a discussion somewhere where somebody argues that that only a sighted fire method is effective. And they say things like, well, point shooting is just too inaccurate. And then, of course, other people argue that sighted fire is only for games, and that point shooting or unsighted fire is the only method fast enough in a reactive situation such as self-defense. Now, I agree with Randy on that, and I would classify myself as both a sighted fire shooter and a point shooter. It really just depends. Distance is going to determine a lot of it. And I have seen a lot of those discussions he's talking about. And they're laughable. I mean, they really are, because, you know, the people who participate in those types of internet discussions, and even discussions face-to-face, they seem to be more interested in defending their gun religion, so to speak. They're more interested in that than they actually are in becoming a more complete shooter. See, the truth of what kind of a shooter we need to be is somewhere in between being a sighted fire shooter and a point shooter. And when I'm done with this podcast, folks, you got to go back and you got to read that article. I will link to it, as I always do. Whenever I have a source that I talk about, where, you know, information that I share with you, I always link to the source. And go to the show notes under this episode and check it out. Click the link. It'll take you right to it. Okay, but right off the bat, let's kind of put into context what it is that I'm talking about here. Because when I say things like I'm talking about now, and I talk about the use of a pistol in a lethal force situation where there's one or maybe more than one people trying to harm each other, the distance is probably going to be typically anywhere from about 2 feet to, I'd say, maximum 15, 17 yards, right? Isn't that pretty much what they say? That's the distance. So the distance is going to pretty largely dictate how precise of a shot that I'm going to need to make. And probably also dictate how quick of a shot I need to make. Now, you know, if you think about it, at a handgun distance, at 2 yards, 3 yards, you know, I've talked about before in an IDPA match, I find myself, any targets that are pretty much less than about 5 yards, I don't really even use the sights. I don't. And lately I've had decent success putting it right in the zero ring or even the one down ring. I mean, the one down ring is like, what, 12 inches or something like that, or 10 inches? I've never measured it. I probably should measure a target and see what it is. I think it's 12 inches or something like that. I mean, come on, if you can't hit a 12-inch target from 5 yards without using your sights, you need to practice. I'm serious. I don't mean to sound arrogant. I really don't. I mean, that's not me. That's not my style. But think about it. If you can't hit a 12-inch ring at 5 yards without your sights, I mean, just draw it from the holster, point the gun towards the target, you should be able to drop a couple of rounds in that 12-inch ring. That's the size, that's a human torso size. And a hit is a hit, a center of mass hit. That's a hit. Don't get so hung up on being able to shoot that inch and a half group from 10 yards. Maybe your pistol will do it, and that's fine. If you have one of those nice, fancy, expensive pistols that'll shoot an inch and a half group at 25 yards, that's fine. You know, on this show, I don't talk much about that. I don't talk much about tuning your 1911 to make it shoot 2-inch groups at 25 yards. I don't talk about how to trick out your AR-15. I'm not that kind of a guy. I'm not technical enough to talk about that stuff. Here's what I do know. All the pistols I own, they are plenty accurate, and especially at a short distance, typical handgun range. It's certainly not the gun's fault if I can't put a shot in a 12-inch ring at, let's say, 5 yards. So think about that. So an attacker at 3 yards is obviously a much bigger target in terms of your spatial preparation. It's a bigger target than it is, obviously, at 10 to 12 yards. And it's also a greater threat than it is at 15 or 20 yards. Okay? An attacker 9 feet away from you is a much bigger threat than somebody 60 feet away from you. So when you have that attacker that's 3 yards away, you need to shoot faster. All right, because you have to shoot faster and you have to compensate for the increased threat. And you have far less time to deal with the problem. Now, there's a nice byproduct of somebody being that close to you. When they're that close, you can shoot fast and still get hits with relative ease. It's not that difficult. Now, on the other hand, if you're shooting somebody at 20 yards away, you're going to need to slow your whole process down. Makes sense, right? You have to be able to make a more precise shot. Now, fortunately, at 20 yards, he's not as great of a threat as he is at 3 yards or 9 feet or 10 feet. So you're going to have time at 20 yards to make that precise shot. Okay, hopefully. Hopefully you will. And this is an argument for sighted shooting. This is an argument for sighted shooting. And Gabe Suarez is a big proponent lately of the sights, the Warren tactical sights. Warren Savigny carry sights, specifically. And I've got them on my Glock 34, and I love them. And, you know, Gabe's a big proponent of where, you know, he says a lot of the fancy night sight systems out there, really not all that big of a deal, and they're kind of overhyped because, think about it, if it's too dark in the area that you're shooting, if it's too dark for you to even see who you're shooting at, okay, your sights might be glowing in the dark. That's great. You got these nice glow-in-the-dark sights, right? That's cool. But you can't see who you're shooting at. What are you going to do, shoot at sound? That's not smart. That's not smart, not safe, and that's reckless. So Gabe's big point is just have normal sights on your gun, because if there's enough light to see your target, there's probably going to be enough light to see the silhouette of your sights. And think about it. Try it. I've tried this. I've gone into different rooms in my home, and I've turned the lights completely off to where it's pitch black. And sure enough, my night sights are glowing bright, very nicely. Big green glowing sights, but I can't see crap in my room. I can't see anything. If I wanted to shoot it, I can't see anything. And then if I just turn on a small lamp to where it's low light in the room, guess what? I can see the target, and sure enough, I can see those sights. And if some of you have a, if you carry a light on your pistol, or if you have a home defense gun, home defense pistol with a light on it, of course you can flick that light on real quick and illuminate your target. Therefore, you probably won't need the night sights so much. So be careful. Be careful with night sights. It's one of the reasons why I love the XS Big Dot sights. Because that silhouette of the big dark, big dot, the silhouette of the big dot in low light, I think, for me, it works out great. It's a nice big... I can't miss that front sight. It doesn't matter whether it's low light or bright light. I just simply cannot miss that big, huge front dot. And if people say, well, they're not all that accurate, Bob. Well, yes, they are accurate. If you know how to shoot them, if you know how to line them up right, they are accurate. But back to what I said earlier. Even at 10 yards, are they accurate enough for me to be able to shoot a 12-inch ring, or a 12-inch group, or even an 8-inch group, or even a 6-inch group. A 6-inch group at 10 yards? Yeah. They're plenty accurate to shoot a 6-inch group at 10 yards. So think about that. So the point-shooting-only crowd. The point-shooting-only crowd. Let's talk about them for a minute. They're going to tell you that since everything always happens up close, there's no point in even learning how to use the sights. Now, my opinion, that's wrong. And, of course, the sighted fire only crowd, they tell you that distance is your friend and that the superior accuracy gained by using your sights is a better thing to rely on. So it begs the question, who's right? The point shooting only crowd or the sighted fire only crowd? Randy makes a great point in this article. They both are. They're both right. If you're attacked by someone reaching for a pistol at 3 yards, you're going to be more worried about getting away from that person, getting out from in front of him, or as they say, you're going to be worried about getting off the X, getting away, and getting your gun out quickly and hitting him more and shooting him more than you're going to be worried about getting a sight picture. Okay, on the other hand, if you're engaging a target at 20 yards away, you need to hopefully get behind cover if you can find it. That's the main thing. Get behind cover or get behind concealment. Find something that's going to take you away from the bad guy's view, and preferably if you can get behind cover, something that's going to stop bullets. That's ideal. And of course, then at that distance, you're going to have to slow down and get a more precise sight picture, and then press off shots and try to hit your target, because, you know, misses are not going to help you in that. So there is a huge balance to this. There's a big balance to that, and that's the point I'm trying to make here. I'm trying to make a point that there is a balance. You need to practice both. You need to practice point shooting. You need to practice sighted fire shooting. Now, Randy makes the best point of this whole article. He says he uses sights as training wheels. What he means by that is he teaches people to shoot first by setting the context for how the situation is likely going to occur. Because you can only solve a problem if you actually understand the problem. So he says the distance of a handgun fight is typically going to be short, so he doesn't have them start shooting bullseyes at 50 yards. Okay, he has them shoot man-shaped silhouettes at about 4 yards. And he puts a small circle in the center of that target to represent the aiming point. Then he teaches them about how their body works under stress and how your body wants to work to avoid tension. So if your body wants to do A in that situation, they're going to teach you how to fight that and do B, which is what you're supposed to do. All right? And I think that's a pretty good point. You know, we tend to want to resort to what our habits are. And that's why you hear the saying so much, practice like you fight and fight, excuse me, train like you're going to fight because you'll fight like you've trained. That's what I was trying to get out. You know, and it's going to be important to step out of that comfort zone. When you want to do A, do B. Especially if you know that B is the right thing to do. Okay, so Randy says first he teaches students to grip the pistol in a manner that not only allows them to point it as naturally as just pointing a finger, but also in a manner that reduces the felt recoil during firing. And I like this. This is important because you do have to have the proper grip to reduce the felt recoil. I love the thumbs forward grip, whether I'm shooting a 1911, which I do own, or whether I'm shooting Glocks, or whether I'm shooting cars, or my little SIG, the thumbs forward grip. I always use the thumbs forward grip. Go to my YouTube channel. Check that out. I demonstrate that. For me, and for a lot of shooters, I was taught this way, it really does cut down on felt recoil. I've talked about this before, but it bears repeating. A lot of people grip the gun too low. They have their hand too far down towards the base of the grip. Get that grip up there. Get the web of your hand right up as high on the tang of that pistol as you can. If you're shooting a 1911, that means get the web of your hand underneath that beaver tail grip safety as high up as you can. Grab that pistol high. Okay, that's why a lot of people take Glocks and they have the grip modified to get a beaver tail put on it. And in one of my Glock 19s, I did that. I had Dale Honeycutt at gripproductions.com. Excellent. You got to check out Dale's work. GripReductions.com. I'll put a plug in there for him. I had him add a really, really small beaver tail to my Glock. He does a great, great job. It's very durable. It lasts, and it gets rid of slide bite. It gets rid of slide bite. That's the gun that I carry most of the time. Now, it's illegal for stock service pistol division in IDPA, but I don't care about IDPA. I have an SSP gun, which is my Glock 34. I carry my modified Glock 19 with a lot of good grip texture on it. See, the reason I have them put a lot of grip texture on it is that also keeps that gun stable in my hand and it reduces felt recoil. If you've got a non-slip grip on your pistol, that also reduces felt recoil. When that gun is slipping around, especially right now, like in Texas, we got 105 degree heat right now. It's easy to have sweaty hands and all of a sudden that gun is sliding around. That makes the perceived recoil feel stronger. All right, so back to Randy's article. He says he also teaches them how to draw and extend the pistol in an efficient motion that just drives it straight to the target. So no matter what position they're in, and no matter where the target is in orientation to them, that pistol's driving straight towards the target. Then he teaches them to look for the sights. Now, this is one of the best parts of his article, and this kind of made me chuckle, and it's still making me chuckle when I'm looking at it here in my show notes. He says, you see, the sights on your gun are those little things, those little bumps on the top of the slide, and they're always in the same place. They're located in one place, and they're permanent. They're right there. They don't move. Okay? They're on top of the barrel, or they're in the front of the slide. And he says, really, your front sight? Your front sight could be termed a, this is great, quote, a muzzle reference indicator. Isn't that cool? What do you think of that? I'll say that again. He says, your front sight could be termed a muzzle reference indicator, because wherever it is, the muzzle is there too. That's why they say front sight, front sight, front sight. So imprinting the draw stroke through constant repetition. You know what? All this stuff, folks, it takes repetition. Let me take a time out here and tell you about the 5 steps in the learning process real quick. And we'll take a quick break and then I'll come back on in segment number 2 and talk to you more about this subject. But when I was working for Tom Hopkins years ago, a sales trainer and a personal development trainer. He taught us that when you learn anything, there's five steps in the learning process. Five steps in the learning process. And this really applies to shooting. You know, I've used this throughout all my life. Whenever I want to learn something, I use this. It was something I was taught long ago at a young age, and it stuck with me. The first step is impact. Something has to have an impact on you to make you want to learn it. So if you see somebody do something, you go, hey, that's cool. I like that. That's cool. What did he just do? There's the impact. It had a positive impact on you. The second step in the learning process is repetition. And this is what Randy's talking about right here. He imprints the draw stroke through repetition. Repetition has often been called the mother of learning. If you repeat something over and over and over and over again, it burns it into your muscle memory. Repetition. So the first step is impact. The second is repetition. The third is utilization. You can't learn anything until you learn, until you take your skills and you go utilize them. Utilization. That's why I keep harping on this show all the time. Get out to IDPA. Take some training. Go out shooting. Set an appointment. Set an appointment with yourself that you have a date at the shooting range at least twice a month. And utilize what you learn. So impact, repetition, and utilization. Those are the first three steps. The fourth step is a very important one, internalization. You internalize. That's where it becomes part of you. You've heard people say that you have to learn to get into reflexive shooting. Have you heard trainers say that? I have. That reflexive shooting, that this has to be a reflexive response. I've heard Masada Ayoub talk about that. It has to be a reflexive response. Well, that's internalization right there. In other words, you've practiced something, you've laid out a scenario in your mind so many times that you know exactly what to do. You know exactly how to draw that gun, where to put that front sight, and how to press that trigger. And it is internalized. It's a reflexive response. You don't have to think about it. This is where you are at the unconscious competent level of your skills. Unconsciously competent. In other words, you don't have to think about it. You've internalized this. You've got to step four of the five steps in the learning process. And this, man, you own this stuff. This is part of you. But that's not the end of it. There's a fifth step in the learning process. And that is reinforcement. So, after the impact, and then the repetition, and then you go out and utilize it, and then you utilize it so much and you internalize it, you have to reinforce it. You know why? You know why you have to reinforce it? If you don't reinforce it, guess what? You're going to lose it. It is a perishable skill. And that's where the old saying, use it or lose it, comes into play. So, somebody can go to a training class, a shooting course, and you can spend 3 days and $1,000, and you can shoot 1,000 rounds, and you can have this stuff down pat. And then if you never do anything with it after that, you're screwed, folks. I'm sorry. You haven't completed step number five. You haven't reinforced it. There are people who do that. There are people who spend tons and tons of money on training, and they go to a course once a year. That's it. And they think they're trained. Well, during that 363 days between the last time you took a course and the time you're taking a course now, that whole year, if you haven't gone out and practiced it and reinforced it, you will lose a large, large percentage of your skills. So let me go over that one more time. Let me reinforce this. The five steps in the learning process and how they apply to shooting. Number one, impact. Number two, repetition. Number three, utilization. Number four, internalization. And number five, reinforcement. Make some notes. Replay this. If you're using an iPhone, hit the repeat button and write this down if you're in a position where you can write. Or save this podcast and remember that. All right, so let's get back to... Well, before I get back to Randy's article, there's more here. There's more really good stuff, and I got to share this with you. But I do need to take a break. Anyway, this is not segment number two yet. Before I start segment number two, I realized I hadn't done any announcements. And I've got to talk to you about some good stuff happening with the Freedom Raffle. 61 tickets so far. By the time you hear this, it'll probably be more. That's pretty good. I've set a goal of 100. Of course, I don't want to stop at 100. We're raising money for good causes. We're keeping our gun rights alive, folks. Money talks, the rest walks. We all have heard that before. And so far, it looks like the Second Amendment Foundation is in the lead. So, let me talk about my Freedom Raffle real quick. If you've not got your tickets yet, come on, let's go. What are you waiting for? Figure out a way not to spend $10 this week and support gun rights. Support my show. Support the Gun Rights Radio Network. Mark Vanderberg does a heck of a job. He works a lot behind the scenes to keep us all podcasting together. Let's help him out. Let's keep him supported. And, of course, you, the listener, you get to choose where part of the money goes. And so far, the Second Amendment Foundation is in the lead. Go to the Gun Rights Radio Network forum. In my section of the forum, the Handgun World Show, you will see the Freedom Raffle thread. Also, you can go directly to handgunworld.com and you can click Freedom Raffle. You can get all the details. I'm raffling off a gun, a Ruger LCP. Two people are going to win a $100 gift certificate to CompTac holsters, excellent concealed carry holsters, and also for competition. And one person is going to win a $100 gift certificate to knives and gear. And I hope that by next week's show, I'm going to be able to announce a fifth winner. A fifth prize that I'll be giving away. So please remember the Freedom Raffle. I also put up a new video on the YouTube channel recently. Check that out. Did a second review on my car P380. I didn't really like the first one. Accidentally deleted it anyway. So I put up a new one, and hopefully I'll have a new one up. I'm going to do a review on my grip reduction on my Glock 19. You got to see it. Dale Hunnicutt's work is just fantastic at gripreductions.com. So check that. Be watching my YouTube channel. You'll probably get an email if you're a subscriber. Subscribe to everything, folks. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe to my Facebook page. Don't forget about Handgun World Show on Facebook. Check that out. Also on Twitter, if you want to follow me on Twitter, go to handgunworld.com and you'll see a Twitter badge on there. You can follow me and tweet the posts and things that I put on there if you'd like. I'm trying to get good at this social media stuff, but it's not my big cup of tea, but I'm getting there slowly but surely. And so that's enough of the announcements. Just a couple of minutes worth here. I don't like to get real commercial at all. This show's about content. It's not about commercialism. So another 15-second break. Only 15 seconds this time. And I will be back on with segment number two. Here you go. Okay, I'm back with you for segment two. The call went great. My customer is a happy camper. So if they're a happy camper, then I'm a happy camper. So now I'm even more fired up here to do segment two. I left off segment one, and I was talking about that where Randy Harris wrote about imprinting the draw stroke through repetition. And he says he teaches students to continually drive that gun to the same place. And that pattern of always finding the sights lined up there, superimposed on the target, builds confidence, builds it every time. Okay? So he teaches them to draw that gun and drive that towards the target over and over and over and over again. Then he has them stop looking through the sights and just look over the top of the gun. They will still be looking at the target, but their head won't be behind the gun. Their head's going to be looking over the top of the gun. All right? So they continue to draw and present, and draw and present, and look over the top of the gun. But now, each time that we drop our head behind the sights, after we extend the gun to see just how close we are to where we are wanting it to go. And often, guess what? You know what happens a lot of times when you do this? A lot of times, that gun's pointing right where you want it. So you use your sights kind of to check to see whether you pointed it right. And he makes a real key point here. He says the gun does not know, nor does it even care whether you're looking at the sights. The gun is just going to put a hole wherever the muzzle's pointed, plain and simple. And isn't that the truth? Isn't that true? You know, I mean, let's face it. You just practice drawing, looking over the top of that gun, with a target 4 or 5 yards away and just pointing, draw and point. Okay? And look to see where the gun is pointing. And then drop your head back behind the gun and look at the sights to see if where you are pointing it is the correct position to where you want the bullet to go. Try that. And the bullet hole's location is going to be directly proportional to whether you pointed the muzzle correctly. You know, you're going, duh, yeah, no kidding, Bob. Yeah, it is. That is simple stuff. I agree, but how often are we not pointing the gun where it's supposed to go? And then we blame it on the gun. It's always the gun's fault, right? It's always the gun's fault. No, it's usually not the gun's fault. Not at a distance of typical handgun distances. If you have a modern gun, when I say a modern gun, that's the wrong word for it. If you have a decent quality, well-known name brand gun, I don't want to get into an accuracy argument here. I don't want to get into a brand argument and brand preference and this gun's better than that gun. That's a useless argument. Any decent gun from a reputable firearms manufacturer out there is plenty accurate at handgun distances. I hate all this internet commando chatter out there saying you have to have a $1,700 1911 to be well defended. Baloney. As I've mentioned before, if you have a $1,700 finely tuned, highly accurate, and reliable 1911, that's terrific. I hope you're with me if I'm fighting with my gun. I don't want to be on the receiving end of your $1,700 1911. I can guarantee you that. But you don't have to have that kind of a pistol to be able to pull off what I'm talking about here on this show. So that bullet's going to go in direct proportion to where you pointed that muzzle correctly. And this is the foundation of shooting well and shooting well on the move. If we can't drive that gun to the target so that the muzzle is pointing at the spot that we're focused on, then how are we going to be able to shoot when we're on the move? And this is one of the reasons why I do like the competition sports. The competition sports do a great job of teaching you how to shoot on the move. Somebody emailed me earlier, and they were listening to one of my shows a while back where I talked about some of the bad habits that you can sometimes learn in competition. Yeah, there are some bad habits you can learn in competition shooting. And that's a whole different podcast. I've already done a show on that. There's also some very good habits that you can learn in competition shooting, and that is shooting on the move, shooting moving targets, drawing from your holster properly, acquiring that sight picture, performing reloads, reholstering properly, gun handling skills, safety skills, all that. All of that is great, and you learn that in the competition sports. So that's why I think do not neglect the competition sports as part of your training. That's my humble belief there, folks. Don't neglect the competition sports as part of your training. I didn't say it's all you need, but I think it's part of your training. Okay, and another interesting point Randy makes in this article, he says the bulk of this type of mental conditioning in shooting, a lot of it can be done without even shooting. A lot of it can be done dry fire practice. Okay, here's an example. If the sights are in line with the barrel, and the sights are pointed at the target, they're pointed at a focal point, and you present the gun to that target, logic says the barrel is now pointed at the target, right? And it doesn't take long for you to figure out whether it is or whether it isn't. And you can do this after you've double-checked, triple-checked, and quadruple-checked to make sure your gun is unloaded and no ammo is anywhere close to it. You can do this in your house, in your living room, in your bedroom, wherever. In the mirror, and if you want to, and you can practice dry firing. You can practice drawing and pointing that muzzle at a target. This is where laser sights are probably pretty good option here. This is where laser sights can probably help you. Draw that gun, squeeze that grip so the laser activates, and see where is, you know, without even using your sights, just see where that red dot is. See where it is on the target. And just keep repeating that motion over and over and over again. Draw your gun, point it towards the target, where's the red dot? Draw your gun, point it towards the target, where's the red dot? Now, Randy says, as shooters progress, they look for less and less feedback from the sights. Okay? Sights are really feedback. Again, sights are just telling you that you're doing everything else correctly. I'll say that again. The sights just tell you that you're doing everything else correctly, and that allows you to make hits faster. Okay, you're not taking time to look for the perfect sight picture. You know the perfect sight picture is there, and you don't have time to prove it to yourself. You just know that it's there. And another good point that he makes in this article about becoming a good complete shooter that I really love is he says keeping your head up and being aware of your surroundings and running the gun in your peripheral vision is a huge key to survival. Boy, isn't that the truth? I've never talked about that before. But, you know, your situational awareness, and there's different types of situational awareness. In that recent podcast, Rob Robideau's podcast where he had Dave Spalding on, I think it was the most recent episode, Dave was talking about situational awareness, always knowing what's going on 30 feet around you, okay? But this here, the context that I take this, where Randy Harris is writing this, I think he's talking about running that gun in your peripheral vision. In other words, you're looking around you, you're indexing that gun, you're figuring out where it is, you're figuring out where your muzzle's pointing, but you're always looking to the left, you're looking straight, you're looking to the right, you're glancing through your peripheral area to see where the adversaries are. Where are these bad guys? You're looking for them too. Okay? I mean, what he says is you're looking at your adversary, you're not hunting down the sights. And why? Because we use the sights appropriately in training until we have internalized the fact that we project the gun the way our muscle and our bone structure works best and lines the sights up. Let me repeat that because I think that's a very important aspect here. Because we use the sights appropriately in training until we have internalized the fact that we project the gun the way our muscle and our bone structure works best. And then that course, that lines the sights up. Jeff Cooper even says, the sights are not used to aim the gun, but to verify that the gun was aimed correctly. Now, Randy goes on to make the point, he says, you know, of course, if we're engaging targets at longer distances, then we're going to need more than just the faith in our draw stroke to ensure that we get a hit. Isn't that the truth? Then you can't just rely on your draw stroke and point shooting. At a long distance, now you're going to have to check in with your sights. So his rule of thumb is, if he's looking at the silhouette of the gun superimposed on the target, and the target looks bigger than the gun, you don't need sights. Once again, if you're looking at the silhouette of the gun superimposed on the target and the target looks bigger than the gun, you probably don't need your sights. But if you look over that gun at the target and the target is smaller than your gun, then you definitely need to use those sights and you better know how to use them. I mean, you better have practiced that situation and practiced those shots. So Randy closes with the point, and I agree, and this is what I concur with, and I found myself relating to this article 100%, which is why I wanted to share it with you. He says, I am absolutely a sighted fire shooter. If I hit what I am aiming at, my sights were in fact aligned properly, whether I saw them or not. So what if I told you I could teach you to shoot accurately without looking at the sights? After all, we use some sightless airsoft guns in the force-on-force class. And after a brief draw stroke tutorial, almost everyone is making sighted fire quality hits, even with sightless guns. I need to repeat that one too. We use sightless airsoft guns in the force-on-force class, which, by the way, I'm looking forward to taking. I'm going to take their force-on-force class, but I'm going to take close-range gunfighting first. And after a brief draw stroke tutorial, almost everyone is making sighted fire quality hits, even using sightless guns. How is that possible? Because they've practiced it over and over and over again. By first teaching you to look for the sights, and by doing that, letting you use these sights as training wheels until your confidence is built to the point where you no longer need them. Sights are training wheels. You use them until you no longer need them, and then after that, you just need them when you need them. And that, my friends, is a phenomenal statement there by Mr. Harris. Sights are training wheels. You use them until you no longer need them. And then after that, you just use them when you need them. Point made, I think. Isn't that a great article? I paraphrased it. I put some of my own stuff in there and related a lot of it to my own personal experience, and I related a lot of it to what I'm practicing on right now. And some of my goals, as I've told you, I've transitioned to shooting my Glock 19 now for the next year, both in competition and in some training classes. And I'm borrowing that once again. Thank you for the great idea, Steve Z, from the Gun Rights Radio Network forums. Thanks for giving me that idea. It's my carry gun. Why not get real proficient with my carry gun? So I found myself relating to this article a lot because this is how I'm going to focus my training. A combination of sighted and point shooting. A combination of sighted fire shooting and point shooting. I happen to believe it's the key. I'd like to know if you agree. Tell me. Chime in. Get on the forums. Put a comment underneath this podcast post at handgunworld.com. If you're not a member over at Gun Rights Radio Network, forums. Join the forum. Start a thread on this. Let me know what you think. What do you think? Is it a combination between sighted fire shooting and point shooting? Or is it one or the other? I've made my case. I'd like to hear yours. And I'm an open-minded guy. My mind's like a parachute. It works best when it's open. So I'd like to hear all sides. Or if you concur, and if you have some personal experience with this, I would love to hear them. And so let me close this podcast with something interesting. I found this on the internet, and I very much like it and very much relate to it. I didn't write this, but I want to share it with you. I don't even know who did write it, but I'm going to find where I found it on the internet and link to it if I can. Why do I conceal carry? Well, thanks for asking that question. Here's my reasoning for why do I conceal carry. I don't carry a gun to kill people. I carry a gun to keep from being killed. I don't carry a gun to scare people. I carry a gun because sometimes this world can be a very scary place. I don't carry a gun because I'm paranoid. I carry a gun because there are real threats in the world. I don't carry a gun because I'm evil. I carry a gun because I have lived long enough to see the evil side of this world. And I don't carry a gun because I hate the government. I carry a gun because I understand the limitations of government. I don't carry a gun because I'm angry. I carry a gun so that I don't have to spend the rest of my life hating myself for failing to be prepared. I don't carry a gun because my sex organs are too small. I carry a gun because I want to continue to use those sex organs for the purpose for which they were intended and for a good long time to come. I don't carry a gun because I want to shoot someone. I carry a gun because I want to die at a ripe old age in my bed and not on a sidewalk somewhere just because some thug wants to take my life. I don't carry a gun because I'm a cowboy. I carry a gun because when I die and go to heaven, I want to be a cowboy. I don't carry a gun to make me feel like a man. I carry a gun because men know how to take care of themselves and the ones that they love. And I don't carry a gun because I feel inadequate. I carry a gun because unarmed and facing three armed thugs, if that's the situation, then I'm inadequate. And I don't carry a gun because I love it. I carry a gun because I love life and the people who make it meaningful to me. And finally, I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. I'm Bob Main. This has been episode number 77 of the Handgun World Show. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next time.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. The shit has hit the fan. All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.